For those of us who are interested in technology, it's really exciting to go to one of these big consumer group conventions and take a look at the exhibit hall to find out what's new. On the 4th of July, I had an opportunity to wander around the exhibit hall for a while. I'd like to thank Jay Dabner, who came along with me and made sure that I was whisked around as quickly as possible. Owing to other commitments with ACB Radio and convention coverage and things, I wasn't able to see as many people as I would like. But over the next hour or so, we will play you some of my wanderings around the exhibit hall with my mini-disc player in action.
I'm Al Gerardo. My company is Wilcox Sales Company. We manufacture audible pedestrian signals. We're located in Claremont, California.
Now, you have not just audio signals this year, but also a number of other, or one new product to
one
do with...
One new product.
Yeah, tell us about what's that called?
We call it a locator. It is a verbal locator that is accessible to the handicapped by either a push button or a small transmitter.
And it is small, too. Can you give us the kind of dimensions on that?
It's approximately 1.25 inches by 5/8 inch thick by 2 inches long.
And so the idea is that somebody would, what, would they purchase the transmitter as a consumer?
We don't know. We think that the people buying the receiver would pass out, since they get two transmitters with each receiver, that they would give them away. In other words, a bus company that put them on their bus stops, if let's say they bought 100 of them, they would get 200 transmitters. So it would be to their advantage to give them away to 200 of their audience.
And then when someone pushes the button on that transmitter, the little box that would be attached to the bus stop or whatever would announce what it's for, right?
Right, I'll push the button.
Okay.
Or perhaps you'd like to.
Oh, let's do that. I like pushing buttons.
Okay,
so what I've got in my hand is a very tiny box with just a small button in the middle. I'll push
right.
The button.
This is bus number 46. Patronized Colonel Saunders.
How long can those messages be?
20 seconds.
Right, and they're recorded in some sort of compressed digital format.
No, it's just push a button and talk.
Right. And how are you anticipating marketing this? Is it ready now for prime time, for going to the different people who might put these up?
Oh, absolutely. It's ready for a bus line or a... For example, this can be used in a hotel to locate the staircases, the restrooms, the elevators.
How do you respond to those who say, well, there might be a bit of noise pollution here if everybody's going around pushing their remote transmitters?
Well, you've got to remind, this is a blind convention, so there's 2,000 people blind, but in the normal hotel there's only be one or two at any given time.
Yes. So the noise pollution would be minimal.
I would think so.
Yeah.
Now, this is also operable by a push button, but not. I doubt if that would be used in a hotel situation.
And how does this technology compare? What are the strengths and weaknesses, I guess, in comparison with the talking signs technology that we hear about?
Well, the talking sign is a infrared source, which carries a shadow. Anybody or any vehicle passing in front of it cuts off the signal. Our unit is a radio, and it can be used inside, behind, above, underneath, anything in its way, and it'll still operate.
Do you have a website or anything that people can be referred to?
Yes, we are at wilcoxsales.com.
And how do you spell the Wilcox?
Wilcoxsales.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for talking to us. I better give you this thing back in case I... That's so small you could easily just walk away with it, couldn't you?
Yeah.
That's great. Well, all the best of luck, and thank you very much.
Thanks for coming in.
Okay. I'm Jonathan Mosen from ACB Radio.
Okay. How you doing, Jonathan?
Hi. And
my name's Kent Albert.
Right. And you're with RFB&D.
That's correct.
What are the big issues for RFB&D? What are you showing off here this year?
Well, basically what we're introducing is... digital audio. We're in the process of introducing digital players and putting our books on a CD, a disc.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, as everyone may or may not know, Recording for the Blind, we're a lending library of tape textbooks, and we have our books on cassette tape, four-track cassette tapes, which is great, but right now there's, you know, as technology improves, we really need to introduce digital audio stuff so we can so navigation is a lot easier and a lot faster due to books.
Now this is the DAISY technology.
That's correct.
And so what players are you supporting? Do you have the Victor and the Plextalk?
That you're correct. We have the Victor that we're showing off and letting people play what to give us feedback, and we also have the Plextalk as well.
How fast is this process going to be? Because we've at the convention heard from Kurt Silke from NLS saying that they're going to take 10 years. When are you going to have all your books converted?
As far as all our books converted, that's really hard for me to answer, but we're in the process of doing it now. We have over 80,000 analog cassettes in our library, and I think at this time we have less than 1,000 on disc. So it's really hard to say. I would say within the next 3 to 5 years, we will catch up with our digital books, what we have on our analog cassettes.
Right, so do you have a player here that we can have a quick play with, or...?
Yes, we have a player right in front of us, actually.
Okay.
Right here, it's the Victor.
The VC. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. So, can you describe this? It's a flat thing, isn't it? It's quite a large flat.
Yes, it's flat. I would say it has your basic keypad 1 through 9
mm-hmm.
with your asterisks and your pound sign. Below that, you have your rewind, your stop start button, also your fast forward.
I noticed that. Just there's a dot on the 5, which is good for the orientation,
okay.
And that the rewind sort of points in a certain way. Like it looks
exactly.
like an arrow key, doesn't it?
It's exactly what it is. The rewind points in a, you know, in the back direction, forward, in the forward direction.
Right.
And then on the right side of the Victor, you have basically a tone key.
Mm-hmm.
You have your volume key.
Yep.
Okay.
So they're like rocker switches, really, aren't they? You'd rock.
Yes.
Rock
exactly.
one side, yeah.
That's very correct. And you have your speed key.
And that, because it's digital, it would speed up the speech, but not the pitch.
Exactly.
It's not like an analog thing.
Exactly.
Right.
Right. And on the very left side of the thing, you have your function key, a key describer that would describe every key that's located on the Victor. Okay. Then you have
So is that the bottom left key?
Excuse me?
Is the key described in the bottom?
The very top.
The top left?
Left.
So if I push it, can I push it now?
You certainly can.
And now I can push another key?
Right, let's see if it's on.
It doesn't make any noise.
Turn it on, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So now I can push the key describer key.
I have to start up for a second.
Okay.
Unfortunately, it was off when you came.
Right, that's fine. So does it kind of boot up, does it?
Yes.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I can feel the thing... vibrating, yeah.
Volume 10.
Okay.
Now you want to play with the key.
Okay, so I'll push the key describer key.
Key describer on.
Okay, and now I can just push these buttons.
Yeah.
Bookshelf 1.
Okay, so they have double functions. It's the number 1 and the bookshelf key.
Right.
Scroll up 2.
Okay.
History list 3.
So... what would the history list do?
The history list is basically what you have, if you're working on it, say, right now, and then when you're done, you want to check your history, it can tell you where, you know, where you've been navigating through the book at that point. The
right.
number one, you hit number one, and it said bookshelf.
Mm-hmm.
That's for if there's more than one book on a CD, it will list what books are on the CD.
How many hours of audio will you be able to store on one CD?
That I can't answer, unfortunately. We are, for anyone that's listening, we are having a focus group tomorrow at 7 a.m.
Okay.
Where the technicians who are evolving this technology can answer the questions, the more technical questions about digital audio.
Right.
Okay.
So the bookshelf key will allow you to select from multiple books
exactly.
on a disc. Okay.
Exactly.
Let's see what else we can do here. I'll just bend down.
Move back. 4.
Okay, so what's the difference between move back and rewind?
Well, rewind, basically move back and move forward is if you want to say search, you want to search by page or you want to search by chapter.
Okay.
Or you want to search by subchapter. That's the difference in that scrolling up. Now, forward and rewind on the bottom is if you're on a certain page and you want to maybe go down to the next sentence, you would just hold it down and you would just move down the page. So that's forward and rewind is navigating on a specific page, whereas though scroll up and scroll down is moving through the book itself.
Right. Okay.
Where am I? 5.
Oh, I often ask that question.
Where am I?
Oh,
5.
Yes. So what will Where Am I tell us?
It will tell you where you're at in the book, as far as page, number, chapter, or such, where you're at
right.
that point.
That would be fantastic for textbooks, right? So if you hear a quote that you want to copy, you would simply stop the book and push this Where Am I key, and you'd be able to copy the quotation down and say that it was from print page 247 or whatever.
Or you could just highlight it. We have bookmarks. If you just read something that you like, you can just simply hit bookmark, and it will highlight beginning at the sentence where it started.
Cool.
So if you just heard something and you liked it, you quickly hit bookmark, and it'll highlight that text.
And I noticed that the 4 and 6 keys have an arrow. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And that's just basically to go forward.
Back and forward, yeah.
Move forward. 6, 7.
No function on the 7?
No.
Scroll down. 8.
Okay, and that makes sense because 2 was scroll up.
Sleep. 9.
Oh, what a good idea. So is that like the sleep feature you'd find on a digital clock where you can set a certain amount of time for it to read?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
Cancel play. Stop.
Oops.
Cancel.
Cancel.
Info. 0. Confirm.
Okay, so that's like an enter key. That's great. And so are books and players in this format actually out there right now?
Very few. Like I said at the beginning of the interview, it's evolving technology at headquarters in Princeton, New Jersey. We're in the process of converting books over to digital right now. So, like I said, within the next 3 to 5 years, our digital library should catch up with our analog.
And, of course, you have a website that people can go to if they'd like more information.
That's right, which would be www.rfbd.org. And the RFB is our initials. R as in Robert, F as in Frank, B as in Boy, D as in David, .org.
Well, you've been a great help, and I thank you very much for taking the time. You've got a line of people behind you, so I won't hold you up any further.
Hey, it's been my pleasure.
Thanks for your time.
Bye.
Okay. Hi.
How are you?
Good. I'm Jonathan Mosen from ACB Radio.
Okay.
And I wondered if we could have a brief interview with you about the product.
You sure can.
So who am I speaking with?
My name is David Raystrick.
Yep.
And I'm with Envision America.
And what's your company displaying here today?
We make a product called IDMate. And the IDMate is a portable barcode identification system. Basically, it uses barcodes to identify products.
So this is how blind people finally get to tell the difference between the peaches and the baked beans.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's not potluck anymore.
Yeah. What's the concept behind it? How does it work?
How it works, basically, is, it's a portable device and it's battery operated. And an individual would scan a barcode and it would come back and speak the product to them. Now, what it is basically it's not as much a shopping tool as it is an identification tool for when you get that item home.
Okay, so it's when you're unpacking the groceries.
Exactly.
Yeah, because it's reasonably large, isn't it? I mean, it's not something you'd carry around?
Well, it is something that you could carry around.
Okay.
It's about 11 inches long, 4 inches high, and 4 inches deep. And here it is right here.
Oh, okay. I'm just picking it up. Oh, it's not too bad at all, really. I mean, people carry around laptops and things, don't they?
You bet.
This is quite small, a lot smaller than a laptop.
It's on either a shoulder strap, or you could use it as a fanny pack through the belt type of item.
It would be probably just about the same as carrying a brow light around with you all the time,
Okay. So basically what the concept is it actually uses your own voice to record what the item description is. See, a barcode is just a number. Okay?
Yes.
And so what we're doing is there's no database currently in there. You basically tailor it to your own mind.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the reason why we do it that way is really two reasons. Number one is all items, I mean, to have a database of that magnitude in this system, I mean, it's so unmanageable and so huge, it makes it really cumbersome. Instead, we let the individual tailor to their own life and the things that they buy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so as an individual scans a barcode, it'll ask them to it'll prompt them to put a verbal description in there. So when they're at the grocery store, they're shopping with somebody sighted, they hand them a can of Del Monte green beans, for example. They scan it. If it's in the database, great. If not, they just hold the record button and say, "This is Del Monte green beans." Let me give you an example. I'm going to wake the unit up. Okay?
Okay.
So now it's in ID mode. And so what I'm going to do is scan an item, and let me just take a Diet Pepsi from there, and I'll just move it around. And it's got an omnidirectional scanner. So
is that an empty can or a can full of Pepsi?
It's a can full of Pepsi.
Whoa.
Did you hear that?
Yep.
So I just scanned it over the product.
And that's your voice, is it, saying
Diet
that?
Pepsi.
That's
Pepsi,
my
yeah.
voice,
okay.
Exactly.
Right.
So the only time I have to put it in is one time. Anytime in the future, it'll recognize that barcode and speak back with that verbal description that I gave it.
So it will require sighted assistance to set it up initially.
The very first time.
Yeah.
The other good thing is you don't have to rely on somebody else's description of what that item is. And a good example of that is, if you scan a beef pot pie, for example, from the grocery store, you could say beef pot pie, or you could say beef pot pie cook at 350 degrees for 40 minutes.
Okay.
You could put cooking instructions in there. So you're not limited to somebody else's description, and that's another good reason why you don't want to have a big database of items, for example, in your database. You can tailor it to what you want.
So barcodes are appearing everywhere, not just on groceries. What are some of the other applications that you might be able to use?
There's all types of applications in terms of CDs, all types of records, albums, cassettes. Really, anything you buy in a grocery store or in a music store has a barcode on it.
How much memory is there? So how many items could I theoretically have in there at one time?
They come with a flash memory card. We have three different styles of 4, 8, and 16 megabyte memory cards. So on the 16 megabyte memory card, you could get really, literally thousands and thousands of items on that memory card.
Is there a limit in time in terms of how long each recording can be?
That 16 megabytes is about 136 minutes.
Right. And each individual recording can be as long as you want, subject to the limitations of the memory card.
That's exactly right. You could if you scan a box of Betty Crocker, for example, cake mix, you could say Betty Crocker cake mix, or you could actually put the cooking instructions. The other good thing about it is any item that has a barcode on it, you use the barcode from the packaging on the product. But if an item doesn't have a barcode on it, you could put one on there. So, for example, we have adhesive barcode labels that you could put on the top of a file folder. You could say, this is your ACB convention folder. I have right here a prescription medicine on a rubber band. That has a barcode with a rubber band on it. So I'll go ahead and I'll wake the machine up and I'll go ahead and scan that. Okay, it's in ID mode, and I'll scan it.
Hydrogen capsules take one capsule daily.
Hydrogen capsules take one capsule daily. So it could tell you your medicine. So that item didn't have a barcode on it. I put it on there. I recorded what I wanted associated with that, and now I know exactly what that is and how to take it and everything. We even have iron-on barcode labels for clothing, where you could, iron a barcode onto the tag of your clothes or on the inside of your pants pocket, and essentially say what that item is, and maybe even washing instructions. These iron-on barcode labels go through the wash or go through the dry cleaner, and that type of thing. So it doesn't have to have a barcode on it for it to be valuable. You could put one on there.
And it's battery operated?
It's battery operated and rechargeable. So essentially you can take it wherever you go.
And how much are you selling it for?
The price is $1,599, and that's basically everything you need to get started and start using it. We've got many, many users right now, a lot of satisfied customers out there. It's kind of a grassroots thing. It's growing as we speak.
Sale before I started talking to you.
We sure did. Yeah. We sure did.
And is there a website where people can find out more information?
Yes, we do have a website. It's www.envisionamerica, that's E-N-V-I-S-I-O-N, America, all one word, .com.
Well, I appreciate you've got some other potential sales here, so I'll wait on you up further, but it's a great product, and I thank you for your time.
Well, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. So who are we speaking with?
Okay, I'm Russell Smith, Managing Director of Polestar International in New Zealand.
Russell, good to see you. Isn't it amazing how you can meet up in these places?
It certainly is. Nice to see you, Jonathan.
Yeah. Well, now, we have the Braille Note, which we have talked about on ACB Radio before, but I actually haven't personally seen one, and there's still a lot of interest in this. Is the Braille Note actually available at this time for sale?
We started shipping about 2 weeks ago. At the moment, we've got a very considerable backlog of orders because there's been tremendous interest in the product. So it's going to take us probably a couple of months before we clear the backlog.
Right.
We've never had as many orders for a product before we started shipping before.
It's really anyone who wants a note taker with a good braille display with up-to-date technology in it. I mean, it's the only game in town in that league, isn't it?
I think it is. It's the only one that kind of has an immediate link to the Windows platform. It's based on Windows CE and uses Microsoft Word compatible document format. So
right.
You've got an immediate transfer between pretty much anyone who's creating documents on a computer.
Well, I'm sitting in front of it and I notice it's just got the main menu up here at the moment, but I notice that the Braille is really very solid. It's not that kind of spongy braille that you often find on braille displays.
Yeah, people like this braille. It's very sharp and clear, I think.
Yeah, and the main menu's in grade 2, so you've obviously got grade 2 translation turned on.
Yeah.
And then we have a keyboard, that obviously the regular 6 keys, they're kind of ergonomically laid out. Like
they're angled out, so it's a comfortable position for your hands. The two extreme keys under the little fingers,
yes.
The left one is a backspace key and the right one's an enter key.
Right. And I notice also that you've got the cursor routing cells above every cell. And it's just the 32-cell version.
Yeah, that's the 32. There is also an 18-cell version.
Right. People will want me to ask you, is there a 40-cell version ever anticipated? I mean, I noticed that on this particular model, there wouldn't be room for 40 cells, I don't think.
No, we're not looking at a 40-cell version.
Right.
I guess the compromise in Braille line length relates to portability versus reading convenience.
And, yes.
We surveyed a lot of people and came to the conclusion that from a reading point of view, 32 cells is pretty efficient and significantly shorter, obviously, than 40 cells, so the whole package is that much smaller.
Mm. How, then, do I work this? I notice you've got four buttons on the front of the unit.
Yep.
So you
have your normal braille keyboard above the display, and then along the front, operated by the thumbs, there are navigation keys. The second key and the third key are forward and backwards navigation of the braille display.
Okay.
Through a document. Depending on where you are in the system, the extreme keys perform the same function as the backspace and enter keys above, but you can obviously use them without taking your hands off the display.
Right.
So if you're moving through menus, you can do so with just the thumb keys, not use the main keyboard at all, and it makes it very quick and easy.
And do you use the extreme end keys for the menu navigation, or you use the middle two keys?
No, the middle two keys are for forwards and backwards through a menu. Mm-hmm. The right-hand key would be the enter key if you're selecting it.
So if I push the right-hand key, okay. Now we're in Keysoft here.
Yep.
Good old Keysoft. I know what that does. Word processor.
Planner.
Okay.
Address list. Email.
So I'm just pushing that key. I can also move
email.
backwards through email. And this is Keynote Gold speech.
It is indeed.
Yep.
Book reader. Scientific calculator. File manager.
And as I move through, that's coming up in grade 2 on the display.
Utilities. Terminal or screen reader. Remote synthesizer.
I noticed that WindowEyes is already supporting BrailleNote in its public beta, and I presume JFW support won't be far away?
No, it's really already available. So both those programs, and we'll probably support others. Alvor is working with us at the moment to have their program support it.
Tell us a bit about the software in here, because there'll be considerable interest in actually how the user interacts with this and what they can do. Because I suppose for people like me from New Zealand who are well familiar with Keysoft, we're familiar with the extensive web processing and planning and things, but I guess there'll be some listening to this who haven't used a Keysoft product before.
Right. Well, the Braille Note, firstly, is a Windows CE-based system, so it's it has a very powerful and complete portable operating system. And the applications we're running in Windows CE here are a complete suite of applications which have been written specifically for use of speech and Braille. We're not adapting an existing application with a screen reading type utility. We've written programs from the bottom up to be friendly and familiar to a Braille user.
So could you use them without the speech turned on at all?
Yes, you can turn on or off the Braille or the speech, depending on what you're wanting to do, or you can have both of them on together as they are at the moment. The main applications are a word processor, which is a full office-level word processor, really. It has all the usual things like merging documents and block manipulations and search and replace, spelling checking, and all those sorts of goodies. Then there is a planner, which allows you to organize your weekday, set appointments. You can set alarms. The alarms will go off even if the machine's turned off. There is an address list database, which is a very flexible database, allows you to do searches on multiple fields, and contains a template with a very comprehensive address list with places for different email addresses, different telephone numbers, and so on. Once you've entered email address lists, email addresses in that list, then they're automatically linked into the email program. So you type a couple of letters of the name of somebody you want to send an email to, and it'll pull up the link into the email address automatically. Then there is the email program itself is a full function email program. It allows you to attach and receive attachments in Microsoft Word variety. It provides for organizing your information into folders. It has copying, blind copying, multiple addresses, and so on. And it's a very simple program to use. You can just follow your nose and answer their prompts and enter your addresses and so on.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that it does seem to have all of the features that you would expect to find in a Eudora or an Outlook Express. I mean, it's got the ability to filter email from lists into folders and all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah. It's a full function email system, but since the speech is fundamentally linked into it and the Braille, it really makes it a very, very simple program to operate compared with doing the same thing with a conventional program and a screen reader.
One of the things that I wonder whether you will add is the ability to browse the web with this, given that you have a PPP connection established to the internet through BrailleNote now.
Yeah. Yes, that's one of the applications that we already have in the planning stage, and that we will probably release sometime in the next 12 months.
Will you write your own proprietary web browser, or will you try and get some sort of front end onto a CE version of Internet Explorer, or what's the idea at this stage?
We're looking at all of those alternatives, including looking at applications that are already available for text-type browsing.
Right.
But at this stage, we haven't really committed to a definite approach, but there are a number of possible approaches.
So the sound that's coming through from Keynote Gold, is that actually hardware speech, or is it in software?
No, it's in software.
Right. So that means there's a sound card effectively in this, and that if the right software was written, we might be able to do internet audio on here.
You could without any software at all, actually, if you wished, you could receive a WAV file from somebody and play it. So the Windows CE has a multimedia sound inherent in it.
Because obviously we'd be very keen to have Braille Note being able to carry ACB radio, for instance.
Yeah.
I think that just... I'll go in and open a document and just have a look at the keys. So we need to go to the word processor. That's me. There we go. Word processor. So I push the right-hand key as the enter key.
Keyword menu.
Okay.
Create a document.
That's what I want to do.
Folder name. Press enter for general.
Okay.
Document to create.
And now I just get a Braille. Can I Braille in grade... Do I Braille in grade 1 or 2?
Whatever you wish.
Okay. And push... is there a chord key for the enter key as well as
No, it's the extreme right key on both the keyboard up above and also the thumb.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Jonathan, top of document. Blank.
So now I'm just...
testing on the Braille. Note.
So it's echoing as I push the space bar.
Here.
Yes, you can have it echo character by character.
Radio period.
Now, I must say, the thing I'm immediately struck by is... it's a very nice keyboard. Yeah.
Thank you. It's a very high quality set of switches, and we've angled the keys and molded the caps so that they should fit most hands pretty well.
Okay. It's a bit clicky, but it's easy to type fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. And now, how much, Russell?
In the United States, the 32 cell version is $5,200. Although there's a conference special here at $49.95.
Gosh.
The 18 cell version, I believe, is
$3,300. Right, and when you buy the 18-cell version, as I understand it, you get the same unit. So you
That's right.
You can upgrade the display later, can you?
Yes. That is something that we're planning to offer as an upgrade, because the rest of the unit is exactly the same. I can't give you a price on that, but that will be a possibility.
And does it all come with a modem, or would you pay extra if you need a modem?
The price I quoted there of $5,200 includes everything, including all of the communications options and so on.
Yeah, because we really haven't covered that, the fact that you can make this part of really another drive or whatever in Windows Explorer on a PC.
Yes, that's right. You can run a program which is supplied with, which is called ActiveSync, and it basically makes the Braille Note look like another disk drive on your PC, so you can move files to and from it just as though it was a drive.
Is that done in serial or USB?
It's serial.
Yeah. Can you use the Braille Note as a Braille display with a parallel port or a USB port, or is it purely serial?
At the moment it's serial. It also has infrared.
Oh. Gee, that is really important. A lot of cell phones are using that technology these days. You could use your cell phone as a modem.
Yes, you could.
Yeah. Well, that's excellent. Well, thank you for your time. You've got a lot of interested punters here, so I appreciate you showing it to us. I'm Jonathan from ACB Radio.
Jonathan, good to meet you. I'm Jim Blackstone.
Nice to meet you. And you're from Advanced Access Technologies, right?
Well, I am their distributor, and I represent them here in the U.S.
Right.
I'm Jim Blackstone. My organization is Blackstone and Associates.
Okay. And so you're the Super Braille person?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. And this is the Super Braille. Okay.
This is the Super Braille.
So what I have here is, so it's a standard laptop with a QWERTY keyboard.
Yes, you do.
And... the Braille display right underneath that with cursor routing keys. How big is this Braille display?
It's a 40 character refreshable Braille display.
Right. And it says, I guess it's saying the Super Braille is a good product on the Braille display.
Yeah, most people that try it out really like the Braille display quite a bit.
So can we talk specs first of all? What kind of processor and things do we have in the machine?
Well, I would tell you the processor is a 233.
Yeah.
Now some people might say, yeah, that's a little slow, and that's understandable. I would just say to you, first off, most of our customers are requiring that it have a lot of battery life. So in Windows applications, you can have 4 to 5.5 hours of battery.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason for the slower speed.
Okay. And what about hard disk space and memory on board, that kind of stuff?
The hard disk space is between 5 and 6 gigabytes. The memory, you can get up to 128 meg of RAM. It also has a floppy disk drive and a CD-ROM drive. It's already built in.
So I've just found the floppy on the left here. And
right below it is the CD-ROM.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Okay. Yep.
We don't want to put it all the way in because then we get Beethoven's Third.
Oh, we don't want to do that. Okay. And the Braille display, what kind of cells or Braille display technology is it?
Well, I know Advanced Access Devices used to get their Braille displays through United and Braille.
Mm-hmm.
And they sold out, I don't remember who they sold out to in Europe, but now they're getting it from Europe.
Right. And on the right-hand side, is there all kinds of status-indicating type cells telling us different things? Is that what's happening?
On the right-hand side of the display?
Of the display, yeah. Or is it just somebody who's written some junk?
No, they've just written some.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's right. I just wasn't immediately intelligible, and I wondered whether it was something significant. Is there speech on this as well?
Yeah, we're running JAWS with
eloquence. Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, JAWS is not necessarily the only one you can use. I have a customer who's going to be using WindowEyes on it.
Yeah. So what Braille display would you configure this for? Is there a Super Braille driver for JAWS?
I think they're working on that driver. I mean, they've been using the Power Braille, but they're going. Yes, they are working on a special driver, and that should be coming out fairly soon.
So, you can use, as opposed to some sort of proprietary Braille note-taking device, this will run your standard screen reader, Microsoft Word, your different applications, and just work like that.
Yeah, that's a big advantage. See, here you're not just getting access to email or limited access. You have, you can access the entire internet. You have Windows 90. It's running standard software.
Hmm. And of course, because it's running JFW, if you want your Braille in grade 2, I guess you can turn that grade 2 feature on.
Yes, you can.
We have cursor routing cells above each cell.
Yes.
How much does it sell for?
It's in the $10,000 price range.
Right. So it's
you can either buy it with 64 meg of RAM or 128 meg of RAM.
Do you think that's a reasonable price? I mean, how does that $10,000 figure come? Where does it come from?
Well, I'll say this: yes, this unit is expensive, but you're getting what you're paying for. You not only are getting a laptop computer that runs Windows 98 with Braille and speech, but you can also turn the Super Braille into a standalone Braille terminal to a desktop computer. You can also use it as a text editor or a financial and scientific calculator. Now, the neat thing of it is that if you want to use it as an editor or as a standalone terminal, there you have up to 50 hours of battery life.
Okay. So you don't have to have a screen reader running to get Braille out of it?
Not if you're in the text editor, no.
Right.
No. But see, the neat thing of it is that on the left of the Super Braille here, you have two bars.
Mm-hmm.
And when you press them together, then you go to that area of the Super Braille I just mentioned, where you can use it as a terminal, or as an editor, or as a calculator, or have access to the manual.
Right. So we've got like what looks like to me on the Braille display, like a Windows pull-down menu that has read, search, chapter.
That's the manual.
Right.
So you have access to the entire manual there, and you can select which chapter that you want. Now, if I take you out of that, we'll take you... Now I'm in the standard menu. Notice what it says now.
Yes, okay. So we've got manual, PC, utils, setup, status, and help. nice pull-down menu, and because it's a 40-character display, it all fits.
It all fits.
Yeah.
So you can select the manual, or you can select it as a PC. Now, if we select PC, this will be interesting. Notice this. Let's go PC. Now it should say on the left LTDT.
It does, yes.
LT means laptop. You can use it as a laptop computer.
Mm-hmm.
Or DT means you can select it as a desktop or as a terminal to a desktop.
Okay. What does LTDX mean?
That means it's like a split screen. Not many people use it in that mode.
Mm-hmm.
You could have a split screen between another computer and this one.
And I see that the menus have been nicely abbreviated so that they all fit onto the display. What are the buttons on the very front of the unit?
All right, now these two right here, mm-hmm. if you press them again, now you go back to Windows 98.
Okay. They're like two buttons, quite large, almost like spacebar type buttons, but they're on the front of the unit.
All right, this one right here, the mm-hmm. one on the left, you can either link the Braille cursor to your system cursor or unlink it.
Right.
Okay. The next one doesn't do anything in Windows, and that's because of JAWS. It used to be an enter key before, another return key.
Mm-hmm.
These two bars over here on the right move the Braille display up and down a line at a time.
Okay, well, I guess that seems like a sensible place to put them because you'd be reaching the end of the Braille line, and they are actually very long, so you can start, if you're a fast Braille reader,
yes.
What
you would do, now watch this, now here's your Braille display, mm-hmm. and you found your cursor routing keys before.
Yep.
Now look at your cursor routing keys. If you come up above those keys,
yes.
You have a long bar here.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Now, what that does, and there's a split in the middle. If you go to the right of the split and press it, that's going to move your cursor forward 40 characters at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably what you would do as a Braille reader.
Yes. That's really like the advanced bar function on the VersaBraille and the Braille lights and,
That's right.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, that's good for familiarity, too, because I noticed that the Braille Note does have the buttons on the front, which seem quite nice, but of course they don't have the advanced bar, which I guess some of us who have been using Braille displays, it might take us a while to get used to.
It would. But once you get used to it, then it works out okay.
Yeah. Oh, it's a nice machine. Okay, so is there a website that people can go to find out more information?
It's called aadbrl.com. And of course, it'll be www.aadbrl.com.
That's brilliant. Well, thank you for taking the time to show us the Super Braille. It's lovely.
Yes, and can I give you my email address?
By all means.
I welcome anyone. If they want to email me, want more information, just want to talk about it, be great. My email address is JBA, like Jim Blackston Associates, @nanospace.com. Nanospace is spelled NanoSpace.
That's brilliant, Jim. Thank you for your time, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the convention.
I will.
Okay, thanks
a lot.
Thank you. Bye.
Oh, we're Novax Industries Corporation.
Booth
number 4, and we're from Vancouver, Canada.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm from New Zealand, so we've both come a fair way.
We both have.
But
yes.
I've come further than you.
You have. That's true. And you've come through more of a time change than I have.
This is true. Now, what's that ticking noise?
The ticking noise is a pole locator that we've added to our DS2000 model, which is a new model for the year 2000. And that'll help a visually impaired person locate the button to push.
So it will make that noise at all times?
It will make it at all times, and it has a sensor in it to register the ambient noise around, and it will keep it 2 decibels above the ambient noise at all times.
That's pretty clever. So if it's on an extremely busy intersection, it will click loud. So is that sensing, for instance, how noisy it is in here right now?
Not accurately, because this is a demonstration unit. It's been set up a little differently than the street level unit would
mm-hmm.
be. But it does change. I don't know if I can get it to change. I'll speak right into the speaker. I don't know if you can notice any increase in the sound at all.
Yes.
A little bit. On the street level, it would stay 2 decibels above the ambient noise.
Okay.
So once you've located that little clicker,
mm-hmm.
then we recommend installation just below the clicker for the actual button. Now, our system can retrofit with anything that's existing in the way of signaling devices, so the buttons may already be in existence at a crossing, or they may be an automatic crossing. If there is an automatic crossing where the light changes, then we would put one of our buttons in for the button-activated timer. And the reason we've added this as a feature to our DS2000 model is so that in residential areas in the evenings, if a pedestrian doesn't need the audible crossing, it won't be set off.
Right.
So what you need to do if you do require an audible crossing is you hold down the button for about 3 seconds and you get that confirmation that it's going to give you an audible crossing. And then we'll give you the audible crossing with a signaling device on either side of the crossing.
Yeah, I was going to say, people won't be able to hear this, but it's in stereo. It's going right and left.
Yes, it is. And that will, you walk towards one signal and keep one directly behind you and you walk in a straight line.
Okay. All right. So it's not only giving you audible indication as to when to cross, but also some orientation information.
That's correct. Yes. And we aim the two signals so that they are about two-thirds or three-quarters of the way across the intersection each, so that you're walking in a straight line and you can keep the signals above the traffic noise around you as well.
I know that in the US, ACB has been seeking to change the mindset of lots of people to do with audible signals. What are things like in Canada?
Well, we have a standard in Canada, and that's the signal that you just heard is the cuckoo, as it's referred to, and that indicates to the user that they're traveling in a north-south direction, and the peep-peep sound that we have as the opposite direction would be an east-west direction, and we already have a standard set, so does the state of California, and we're going to be working with some national representatives from the United States to help them set the American standard as well.
Right. I guess it makes sense to do a bit of advocacy for some sort of standard, and that should increase the prevalence of audible crossings.
That's right. And the more safety factors that we can build into people's mobility in their day-to-day life, the better.
One of the things that is quite common, very common in New Zealand, is to have a tactile indicator, not just for people who are deafblind, but also these tactile indicators are used a lot on the poles because they're cheap. Is that something that's common in Canada, to have a little pin that pops out to tell you when to cross?
Well, not so popular in Canada. I understand it's very popular in the state of California. We're working on some sort of a system for the deaf as well, and that may include some sort of a vibrator or tactile arrow, but those are developments still to come.
Excellent. And do you have a website by any chance?
Yes, we do. It's www.novax.com.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Okay. Dan Clark from Heather Joyce, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, Jonathan. Thanks for coming by.
Oh, we're having fun. Now, you must be pretty excited about version 3.7.
Yes.
Hey, what happened to 3.6?
That's a good question. I don't know how actually the numbering gets determined, but I think that's something that development would have to answer for you.
It's like one of those politicians, you know. That's a good question, and I'm glad you asked it. Next question.
That's right.
Yeah. So what is in 3.7?
Well, 3.7, one of the nice features about it is the installer is totally different. We have a completely new install, whereas in the past you had to, if you wanted to add a synthesizer or a braille display, you had to go and do a complete new install all over again. Now we have an installer that's more modern, and you can just simply choose to pick and choose a new synthesizer or a new braille display to add to the existing program without actually having to go through the whole installation. So you can pick and choose synthesizers, braille displays, and also you can even choose not to install certain things. So you can go back and uninstall things in a similar fashion.
So do you do that from the control panel? Is there some sort of special program that does that?
Actually, you go through the JAWS submenus. In other words, when you go to the program start menu, or start menu programs, then you go over to the JAWS group, and there's an item there that still is at the present time called uninstall JAWS. They may change the name of that because it's really modified JAWS now. It's not just uninstall. And when you do this, you have three choices. The first choice is to modify the existing version of JAWS. The second choice would be to repair the version of JAWS. And the third, it's radio buttons. The third radio button is to uninstall JAWS. And what you get is you get a tree view if you choose to modify. With checkboxes. So you have a tree view with different checkboxes, and one of the levels is speech synthesizers, another level is your Braille devices, and the third level is the popular application for script files that we have. So by default, all of the script files get installed. But let's say that you're never going to use PowerPoint, or you're never going to use Microsoft Access, and you need hard drive space. You could actually go in and choose to modify the installation and uncheck the checkbox for the PowerPoint and Access scripts, and they would not be installed.
And you can actually do that as part of the install process, right? So if you don't even ever want to have installed the PowerPoint scripts,
That's right.
You can go in and not install them now.
Absolutely.
Right. There's been a lot of talk in the last few months, I think I first noticed it surfacing about Easter, to do with JFW and I guess using similar techniques to the virtual cursor, but for PDF files. Has that made it to 3.7?
No, not yet.
Right.
What we're waiting on, and I think it's the same thing that all of the Access vendors are waiting on, all the screen reader vendors are waiting on, is Adobe is still has yet to complete their part of the process, that they're modifying a file or something within their side of the equation that has to be done. And once they release that, it will be accessible to JAWS and to the other products like Window Eyes and so on.
And what else have we got in 3.7? Because there are a lot of features there.
Yeah, there's a few nice features that I really like, and one that a lot of users have requested is the ability to speed up the voice rate or to slow down the voice rate on the fly.
Right.
So as you're doing a say all and you're sitting back and relaxing and listening to it read, you can hit your page down key and it will speed up the voice, or you can hit your page up key and it will slow down the voice. And you can tap the keys, you know, repeatedly, and it will gradually increase or decrease the speed of the voice as you go along. That's been a very highly requested feature that we're glad is finally in there. Additionally, if you're familiar with JAWS, in the Say All, we had in version 3.5 what we call the skip ahead to next unit, which was tapping the shift key. If you had JAWS set up to read by sentence and you pressed the shift key during a say all, you could listen to the first few words of a sentence and then tap the shift key and it would move to the next sentence and so on, therefore skipping through the document rather quickly. What we've done with 3.7 is we've taken the left shift key and made it repeat the current unit, so that if you didn't quite catch that sentence that was just read, or the paragraph that was just read, or the line that was just read, however you have it set up, you can hit the left shift key and it will repeat that same sentence for you, and you can just continue to do this over and over. The right shift key is still going to be the fast forward key to shift ahead to the next unit.
Yeah, I find that an interesting one, because I would have thought that if the right shift key moves you forward a sentence, that the left shift key should actually move you back a sentence, not actually just read the current one, but I guess
right.
It's just an interface preference thing,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Now, if you remember in the old DOS days with JAWS for DOS, we had a rewind key.
Yeah.
And we're thinking that eventually the left shift key will become a rewind key. But at the moment it just says current sentence.
It repeats
the current sentence, or unit, I should say.
Right. And what else is there?
Well, we've got some new scripts, some really nice things like SoundForge 4.5 scripts.
Yeah.
We've got Visual Basic 6 scripts, which a lot of people have been asking for. We will have some scripts for Internet Explorer 5.5, Windows Millennium, Microsoft Project, which is another new one. There's another one called Anytime Deluxe 6, which is sort of like a calendar program.
Eric Demery was trying to sell me on this one the other day. He thinks it's pretty cool.
Yeah, he seems to think so, and I think it's fairly nice. I've seen a few of these type of calendar programs, and so far it's reading fairly well. We will have, of course, by the time this is released, we'll have finished the scripts on it. It's not quite ready at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
We also have scripts for Cakewalk Pro. Family Tree Maker version 7. By the way, Cakewalk Pro version 9, I should have said. We support OmniPage Pro version 10. and another program called Microplanet Gravity version 2.2.
Oh, yeah. There'll be a lot of people who are really keen to hear that, because news reader access in Windows has been a bit of a problem area.
Yeah. Yep. Another of my favorite features has to deal with Excel. This is an improved script for Excel, or improved scripting, I should say. When you had a region that had row and column headers, you had to go in and set them every time. Okay, so if you closed Excel and went back in, you would have to locate your row and column headers and redefine them so that as you navigated through there, you could hear, as you did a left or a right arrow, you would hear the column above you, the title being read, or if you navigated up and down, you would hear the row column or the row title out to the left being read. But again, you had to reset them every time you went into Excel.
Right.
With version 3.7, we save those settings for you for each file. So each file, you have application-specific settings. And you can have more than one region defined at a time, so you can set up multiple regions within the spreadsheet. Also in 3.5, you could only have one cell that you could monitor. You know, you could monitor this cell with a keystroke. And now we will have somewhere between, I'm not certain on the number because it's still in beta testing, but we will have somewhere between the ability to monitor between 10 and 25 different cells. And again, the row headings, the column headings, the monitoring of these cells and such will all be saved with each specific worksheet file. And incidentally, all those things can scroll off the screen. They don't have to be visible on the screen for you to read them with JAWS.
Now, of course, you've had a private beta of this here at the convention to show people. And one of the things that's interesting about the current private beta is that you are able to set, customize the verbosity a lot more, so that some people like to have beginner verbosity turned on, but they get really annoyed with the for screen sensitive help press insert
yes.
F1. And so now you can actually customize, it seems, what is spoken in each of those verbosity levels.
That's right. You can customize it much more. And additionally, you can also set up now with 3.7, you can set up different voice rate and punctuation and so on settings for each individual application that you're in as well.
Mm.
So if you want to go to the internet and have it read a little bit slower because of all the links and different things that you might hear, you can set your voice rate to a slower rate. Whereas if you go to a Microsoft Word, you may want to read rather rapidly, and you can increase your voice rate in that application. And then from then on, every time you enter that particular application, those voice settings are all saved. So we've got a lot of new customer-requested features added in here.
Yeah. When are you going out of private beta, and I presume there will be a public beta at some point?
Well, here we are. Today's the 4th of July, so happy 4th of July to you.
And to you.
Thanks. And so I would expect that it will be by about the middle of the month, maybe towards the end of the month, somewhere in this time frame. So certainly, hopefully, within the next week or two. That's my guess. Now, you know how that is. A salesperson likes to say things like that, but a programmer may tell me no.
Well, it's important to get it right, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it's hard to do that. You have to walk a balancing line sometimes, and we're saying about 2 weeks.
Have we missed anything else of particular note that that you wanted to highlight?
Well, there may be some other things that I haven't mentioned,
right,
simply because of the fact that we're testing them, and I don't want to say anything at this point in time. But there certainly are quite a few new features. And again, most of those new features are coming about as a result of us listening to people. One thing that I do want to say is that at the moment, Hinner Joyce, you know, is a division now of Freedom Scientific, and we don't have our own listserv. We hear comments about this. But one thing I want to assure your listeners is that there are probably about 10 or 20 people at Hinner Joyce who monitor various listservs and participate even in the various listservs. And we get a lot of our suggestions from those listservs, even though they're not our own. And one of the things that I like about that is that, you know, we don't censor anything. These are what we hear on the listservs. You know, if it's bad, we take it. You know, if it's mud in your eye, well, We take it and we try and make it better. And, and we do pay attention and we do listen to people, and we get a lot of our suggestions from the listservs, even though we don't have our own personal ones.
Well, I know a number of you are on the blind tech list that that I run, and I see you on some of the other blindness-related lists.
That's right.
So that's fine. And, of course, www.hj.com is the place to go. Is that website changing with your Freedom Scientific business, or will it still be hj.com for now and forever?
For now, it's going to be hj.com, yes. There, if you go to the hj.com website as of now, we've changed it as of about 2 days ago, and we have links to Arkenstone, we have links to Blazy, but eventually it will all become Freedom Scientific.
Right.
Just for the benefit of your users, the 1-800 number for Arkenstone, which was very easy to remember, 444-4443, will probably become the major incoming sales and information toll-free number for all three, for the entire company as Freedom Scientific.
Right. Well, because 1-800 real estate is pretty tough to get, isn't it?
Yes.
Especially good stuff like that.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't asked you, I've got to ask you this. How much is it going to cost to upgrade to 3.7? This will count against a software maintenance agreement, right?
That's correct, yes. So the typical upgrade price in the States is about $100 per upgrade, and that's currently what we're selling it for, $100. A person can buy an SMA, or software maintenance agreement, if they have a current version of JAWS, for $100. And the SMA gets you actually two upgrades, so it's really the least expensive way to keep upgraded. And it also gives you a chance to participate in the beta process when we release this public beta, version 3.7. Anyone who has a current SMA will be able to download that and use it.
Excellent. So that's JFW 3.7. Thank you so much. How's the exhibits gone for you?
Very, very well.
Yeah.
We always see a lot of friends here, and it keeps us busy.
Do you actually sell product here? I mean, do many people come and buy JAWS from exhibits like this, or is it mainly existing JAWS users who want a sneak peek at the upgrade?
Yes, it's a little bit of both. We sell complete products here. We do give a discount normally at the show, a 5% discount in this case. And we also waive the shipping charges because we feel like, you know, if you come to a show, you're going to collect a lot of goodies and material and things like that, and you may not have room to ship back a big old box full of software in your suitcase. So what we do is we take the person's name and information and ship it to them at no charge.
Well, it's good that you've had the private beta here, and I can tell people, you know, that if you are a SoundForge user, you're going to love these scripts when they come out. They are they make a significant difference to the use of SoundForge.
Absolutely.
For instance, making a selection with the left and right bracket key, once you've made that selection, it will speak the length and the file that has been selected, the duration of the selection, and it's all done automatically.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's really been a lot of work, and it's a lot of fun to have these new things come out.
It's good stuff, and I thank you for your time. You've got lots of customers here, so I won't hold you further, but we'll look forward to the public beta.
Jonathan, I thank you very much, and we really appreciate everything you do.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, I wasn't quite quick enough on the record button on my mini-disc recorder to get the beginning of this demonstration, so I need to explain to you that we're about to jump in to a demonstration of the Screen Rover tactile mouse, a fascinating bit of technology that you may have heard a bit about on the email lists after the conventions. Let's listen to this now.
The box which has all the motors in it.
Okay.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
It is in turn connected to a card which fits into an ISA slot in your computer.
Right.
All right? So, now the best way to hang on to this mouse is between your thumb and your finger, like that.
Like okay? that?
Yep, and you don't have to grip it too hard.
Okay.
In fact, you probably don't want to because the mouse will move by itself, and you want to let it move by itself. So it takes a bit of a light touch and a bit of getting used to that way.
Okay. All
right? Now, and also, if you rest your hand on the ground, on the table there, that will give you stability as you move over very small icons. And in Windows, there's a lot of very small icons.
Right.
The first thing I want you to do is where are we going to start? I'm just going to shut down Microsoft Word here. So can you just
sure.
let go for a second? Because it will move.
Oh,
I'm just going to start it up again. Take the mouse and move it over towards me to the right as far as you can move it.
Left.
Good. You're on the right edge of the screen. Move it up as far as you can. You're now in the top right corner of the screen.
What's stopping it from moving?
The mouse itself. There's a that is as far as the mouse can move.
Right.
Okay? And it always calibrates itself automatically to the size and shape of your screen.
Okay.
If you've got a 15-inch, 17-inch, no matter how big the monitor is, and it doesn't matter if you change the resolution of your screen. The top, as far as you can move the mouse to the top and the right, is always going to be your top right corner. As far as you can move it to the bottom and the left, is always going to be the bottom left corner of the screen, etc. That gives you a spot, gives you a place to start for spatial orientation of where you are on the screen.
Right.
Okay? So, if I told you that the date time was basically, it's just a little bit over, but it's basically in the bottom right corner of the screen,
mm-hmm.
you should be able to find it.
Okay, so we'll just shift, move down to the bottom.
4:34 p.m.
Okay.
Okay, and you found your taskbar right
okay.
there. That means exactly that you can move across towards the left, and you'll move across the taskbar, and you'll be heading towards the start button.
Rover base tab.
That's our own Rover software. Okay, now you just jumped in. Did you feel how you broke free a little bit?
Yes.
This is booth number 9. Okay, to pop. Now move down a little bit because you're not in the taskbar anymore. Now you're back into it.
Okay.
Feel it resistance?
Yes.
See, what it's doing is through the pull push effects, it makes it feel as if you were walking across the Windows environment, if it was a great big floor, you would have, and you were using a cane, you would feel each indentation of, each graphic would feel like a little indentation underneath the cane.
Right.
And that's basically what's happening with your cursor here. We're using push-pull effects to make it feel as if you're falling into a little indentation.
Okay.
And when you're in that indentation, you know you're in the active area of the graphic, so when you click on it, something is going to happen. You never miss with this mouse. If you ever listen to sighted people using a computer, you hear click, 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 because about a quarter or a third of the time, they miss.
Right.
With this thing, you never miss. I can guarantee that. That's why you have to keep your fingers off the buttons, because if you click, you know something's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So keep moving across until you get to the start button. And you'll feel a bunch of little things as you move across. Yep, push hard. That's our quick launch bar. Actually, it's the Windows quick launch bar, which is not accessible with any other screen reader but ours.
All right. Wow.
It'll give you a desktop button and all the rest of it, which is in there. We have a bunch of programming tools there, of course.
Okay.
This. Time bar button.
Keep going. Start button.
Windows Explorer button. Toolkit Windows.
So these are all the applications that you have open on the taskbar?
Those actually were, are the quick launch button. They're the ones you can quickly launch.
Right.
Now, you're on the start button.
Click here to begin.
Click there to begin with your left mouse button.
Okay.
Start button.
Excellent. Now move the mouse up.
Shut down menu item.
Good. And keep going to get to programs. Oh, no, move up.
Oh, which way are we going?
Move up.
We're going up, okay.
Log off, menu item. Lunch menu.
Each one of those bridges is a menu
Help
item.
Menu item.
Okay.
Find menu.
And eventually you'll get to programs.
Settings menu.
And you felt it pulled you to the active area of the screen.
Right.
Programs menu.
Now, programs menu opens up a sub-menu which is just to the right, so move it over. You don't have to click, just move it over to the right, and you'll feel resistance as you leave one menu and go into another.
Microsoft reference menu.
Yes. Now, move down so you get to Microsoft Word.
Internet Explorer menu item. Microsoft Word menu.
Yeah, and you can definitely feel it's like a click.
Yes.
You know, as you... it's almost like you're going over a bump for
yes.
each item.
Now click that. Now left click with that, and Microsoft Word will open, and you'll feel the mouse move a little bit under your hand.
Open yeah. Microsoft Word.
Okay, now those are the two core elements of what Rover does.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was saying with the cane analogy, you can feel each indentation in the screen. Okay, as if you're moving your cane over top of them, and you know you're over an icon because the cursor falls in. And then the speech tells you exactly what that graphic is. And then the last bit is that Rover actually has built-in intelligence, so it will take you where you need to be and where you want to go. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it will physically move under your hand as the cursor of the mouse moves. So what I want you to do now is to take the mouse and go all the way to the bottom to the taskbar. Just move it all the way down. And you should find the Rover tab. You found it. That's the Rover page tab.
Yep.
So that's our Rover software minimized on the bottom of the screen.
Right.
Now, I'm going to have you open that, but before you do, what's actually going to happen is the Rover window is going to open up somewhere in the right corner of your screen. It doesn't fill up the whole computer screen. It's just a minimized window. But the neat thing is that the cursor will go there, and the mouse will follow underneath your hand and go directly to that spot.
Okay.
So click there and don't hang on to the mouse.
thinking real good.
Good grief. It's jumped way up.
Yeah.
Okay.
It always will take you where you need to be.
Yes.
If it's a dialogue box opens, it'll go there too. Sorry?
So how much does something like this cost?
The whole thing, including the screen reading software, is $995 US.
That's a lot less than I thought. Where's the company at?
It's in Canada. We're up in Toronto. We do have dealers in the U.S. depending where you're from, and I don't know them off the top of my head, but I could get that information to you.
Are you guys the only one that makes something like this?
Yeah, it was developed at the University of Waterloo in Canada, and we are the sole manufacturers and distributors of it.
I don't want to take away from Mr. Moses' time. Do you have any literature that you could give?
Sure, but you really should sit down and give
yeah,
us
yeah. I won't be much longer. Okay. Let me ask you, why would you think a blind person would choose to work with this as opposed to operating with the keyboard?
Yeah, that's what
several answers to that. Now, first of all, I will correct you on your question simply because of the use of the word oppose. Okay? I'm a very savvy computer user who's sighted. I have a very good friend of mine who was here earlier who's one of our programmers who's not sighted. There's no opposition between using a keyboard and the mouse. This is an artificial opposition created basically both for marketing purposes and other reasons. But anyway, the point is that both are tools. I use keyboard shortcuts all the time. But there are times where keyboard shortcuts won't get me where I want to go, and they're not as fast as what I need. Frank, our programmer, uses keyboard shortcuts all the time. And he learned how to use, learned how to use the standard screen reader was the first thing he ever learned how to use. JAWS, whatever. He programmed using that, etc. And now he uses keyboard shortcuts when they're convenient for him, and he uses the mouse when it's convenient for him. When he's using C++ and Visual Basic programming, keyboard shortcuts aren't going to get you to the watch window, the debugging window, etc., unless you write a macro for it. Even then, it's incredibly awkward.
Okay, so the next question would be, why would you use this particular product as opposed to using the mouse movement keys on a screen reader like JAWS or WindowEyes or Window Bridge?
Because it's a lot faster, and it's a lot easier to figure out where you are, and it is one thing I want to get back to your original question is it is the easiest, without a doubt, I'll take this back-to-back against anybody, it is the easiest computer access system to learn. I used to train users how to use computers, and several of my associates used to train people how to use Windows-based screen readers. And we usually had to allocate for a new user, especially if they weren't too young, to put it bluntly, about 3 6-hour sessions, and that's rough. And a lot of times take a lot longer than that. I can get somebody up and running with the mouse in about 20 minutes, and the reason is because Windows was made for the mouse. You don't have to memorize anything. You don't have to memorize your shortcut keys. You just learn that the top of the window is your title bar, the bottom is your task bar, and go and explore the rest. Forget about your screen reader.
And you do have to buy the full package, do you? I presume that you've got to, even if you're running JFW or WindowEyes, you need the some sort of software running in the background?
Well, we think it works a lot better than JFW and WindowEyes, but if you're really committed, you can, in fact, use JFW and WindowEyes with this. You'll still get our screen reading software. And, in fact, you can even switch on the fly from our screen reading software to JFW if there is a specific area where you really like its use.
And is there a website where people can go for further information about this?
Datacom.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much.
We've got the beginning of it. Yeah. Like, if on the internet, there's a context menu that lets you choose whether you want to feel lines or words or characters. So you can drag and drop stuff. You can line up your bullets and actually feel where they are. You can line up your lines on indentations. You can work in access now, in a form, in access, and crab across and figure out exactly where you are. You can even set up. You can set up a form in Access by yourself. Mm. You can instead of having to learn take special training on say how to use Access for Windows, what you would do is go to a regular computer training college and learn how to use it, or buy Access for Dummies and learn how to use it instead of getting special tutorials.
And that is one of the big issues, that people cannot go to regular classes in their neighborhood.
Exactly.
To, yeah.
And you can take tech support from anybody. Like, you can call up HP tech support to tell them why is it your printer's not working, and then tell you, oh, right click over here, left click.
Yeah.
And
that, yeah.
And even better, you can be that HP tech support person because you're talking to mouse clicks and the sighted user on the other end is talking to mouse clicks and you're talking the same language with each other.
Okay. Do you have an easy example to demonstrate of drag and drop with the mouse?
Drag and drop?
Mm.
Well, whatever you want to do. Yeah, actually, here's an easy one. Well, I can do an insert date. You'd have to open up a document or something.
Microsoft.
Do you want just a verbal example? Or do you want to try something?
Okay, so that's Microsoft speech, I take it.
Yes, it is, actually.
Okay, yep. So, and I suppose I should do it with the mouse, should I?
Well, it depends what you want to do, yeah. I mean, if you were, where it makes sense to use your keyboard, like I do a lot of text editing in Word with my keyboard. Like if I'm going to cut and paste a word and it's two lines away, I'll do that on my keyboard. But if I want to move a picture or a logo into my document, I'll probably do that drag and drop. If I'm moving a big chunk of text out of, say, off of the internet and onto Word because I want to look at it later and do editing on or whatever, then I'll probably do drag and drop.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It totally depends what you're doing. The point is that is available to you. What I can show you that's kind of neat will give you the principle of what I'm talking about. I'm using the changes on the fly. If, I don't know, I'm just going to type up a bunch of text. Okay. Go to the mouse and select the middle mouse button. Press the middle mouse button. That's our context.
Feel lines, menu item object.
So move the mouse down. And
feel line down, menu
this is our own context menu. You can switch our settings on the fly.
Okay.
So we've got feel line bounds. Keep going.
Yeah.
And pull it down one more.
Words, menu
by the way, feel line bounds is you feel the end of the word of a line so that you can tell if your indents are lined up.
Right.
Okay? If your text lines up on a bunch of lines. Feel words, you feel each individual word. So if you selected that and you had something on your clipboard, you could feel right across until you get to the word that you want to be in between a bunch of words and paste it there. Move the mouse down one more.
Feel characters,
same thing. If you had set feel characters, you could actually feel where the cursor was between two characters and drop something in there. Now, obviously, if you're just doing spell checking, I wouldn't recommend that you use a mouse for that. That would be clumsy, right? You would use the cursors to move across. But if you wanted to drop a graphic in there, or make sure your decimal places are lined up in a table, or make sure your bullet points are lined up, and make sure your bullets are lined up, you can actually feel each individual bullet move up and down and see that they line up. Feel it line up. Keep going down. Feel groups is what we use on the internet to actually feel groups of text together. So where you feel tables together and you feel hyperlinks with the associated text together. So that when you're on the internet, you don't have to reformat and you don't lose things which are connected together. So if you were on a table and you were taking a look at football scores for the Euro Cup, say for instance, and you wanted to see you had a few teams, Romania, Italy, Britain, right, all in a row, and it was a table. So off to the side for each one, it said score, it say average points, and say next scheduled game, right, on a table for you to click. Well, if you get that all reformatted, then what you're going to get is Britain, Romania, Italy, then score, 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 games played, games played, games played, and you have no idea which one of those games played or which one score to click, which is connected to the particular team, because it's all been taken from a horizontal axis down to a vertical up and down axis. Here, you just use the mouse and you just feel what's next beside it. Okay, I'm on score. What's beside it? Britain. Oh, okay, so if I hit this, Britain. Score, Britain. Britain, score. And then you make your decision to click. Or you move down the next one and you're on the table and you feel, and it reads aloud to you, Romania. What's beside Romania? I'm going to keep going across until I get to the one that I want.
Right.
And you feel each one as you move across.
Hmm.
So the basic purpose is that you can forget, we want you to forget that you have a screen reader. We don't want you to memorize things. We don't want you to have to worry about macros. We don't want you to have to worry about what the next version of our screen reader is or which next
hotkey combination is going to get you to the date time, whatever. It doesn't matter. Just forget about it and just work. Just use the mouse and have fun. And when you get proficient and it makes sense to you to use shortcut keys, go ahead and do so. But forget about what's working between you and the computer.
That's great, because it really does give a lot of blind people these days being prevented from doing tech support and things, because they really have not become familiar with how a sighted person interacts with Windows.
Exactly. And the only way you can figure out, I mean, the reason why it works so well with new users, and I've seen this a lot for, you know, people who have been using DOS most of their life, who are now maybe in their 40s or 50s, who are using the Windows for the first time, or have had a heck of a lot of difficulty converting. And the reason is because if you think back to when you first learned Windows, you had to go through two mental processes. One is get the layout, imagine the layout on the screen, right? Spatially somehow, whether it's visually or spatially or whatever, so that the logic of the keyboard strokes would work for you. So when you moved up, down, arrow, or went to your Alt key or Control key, it worked for you. And actually, if you never learned that, and you just did it purely by memorization and shortcut keys, then you found how difficult that is. All we're asking you to do is forget about the shortcut keys. All we want you to do is learn the shape of Windows. And you do that, you don't have to memorize it, because you do it just by moving the mouse around and you're immediately reminded of it. And you're using muscle memory, kinetic memory, develops very quickly, where you're basically doing the same thing you do when you play the piano or play the guitar. You don't count the frets, you don't count the keys, start going there.
Mm.
And you don't have to learn that whole part of figuring out the logic of keyboard shortcuts. If you do, great, go ahead, use them. But if you don't, then you're not paralyzed to use a new program or use whatever.
Well, I certainly urge people who might have access to this in their area through some sort of display or demonstration to come and have a play, because it's really something that you have to actually feel to fully appreciate, I think.
Yeah.
That's
I get really excited about this, so I start blithering on and on, so I hope you excuse me.
Oh, no. I appreciate your time.
No problem.
That's great.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
My pleasure.